Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Denise. This is the Champion Mindset Series, part two, with John Sarasani, businessman, venture capitalist. And we just had a great part one. And we kind of left at this really fun part about almost like, I've seen your interviews. I'm so entertained on IG. But can we talk about the kitchen table moment?
Sure.
Do I have this right? I mean, I've heard about that almost like the aha moment working at your kitchen table.
Yeah, kind of. Loosely, I guess you would say that. It's more that I decided that working at my place in corporate America, there was a lot of fluff and unnecessary expenses to do what the core of this job was. And it was employee benefits, consulting, and brokerage work. All right. But okay. I didn't need this big office. I didn't need this big team. I didn't need, you know, this library of manuals and all this other stuff. And I kind of had this aha moment where it's like, wait a minute, we could just cut all of these expenses that really don't apply to the type of client I'm working on. And I could just do this on my own because we have 20,000 employees. We have 20,000 employees, but 19,999 of them aren't doing anything on your account. You know, it's me doing everything. So why don't I just do this, not make the same mistake other entrepreneurs make where they go hire a bunch of people they don't need, because then I'm just recreating the same problem I just left. And I'm just going to do this at home from my kitchen table. I'm going to go to the UPS store and get a mailbox so I have some kind of professional looking address that's not my residence. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get a cell phone that's just dedicated to a work number, which nowadays you don't even have to do because Google Voice and everything else makes the voice over IP is easy to do that. I'm going to set up a website and, I'm going to go approach these clients just like I am working for the big dog in corporate America. And maybe a lot of them aren't going to come because they want that name on my business card. And shoot, I'm only 27 years old. Maybe they're going to have some fear there. But to replace my income, what I was making, I don't need them all to come. I only need about 10% of them to come to replace that. So I kind of just dove in and started dialing for dollars from my kitchen table and got some traction relatively early. I had a non-solicitation agreement, so I wasn't able to go after any of my old clients. So I had to really start this thing from scratch. But I believed in where I thought it could go, and it got there. I was very exceeded it.
I have a really specific question about that. I was fortunate to jump on your IG Live before this interview with Adam Jablin. And I don't want to give it all away because I want people to watch that interview. But one of the most important things you said is that people need to know everything about the business and the job. Do you think at that jumping point at age 27, you had the expertise, the knowledge, the wisdom, the confidence? I mean, where were you at that point?
Well, I think I was really blessed because I started this. I was at this company called Arthur J. Gallagher, which in this industry is one of the giants. And I was fortunate because I kind of got thrown into the mix on a team where I started not being able to trust the people that were on my team to necessarily do the job, either because they were stretched too thin or there was attrition or, whatever the case may be. So as an outsider, you're looking at Arthur J. Gallagher as, wow, okay, they got all these experts here and all these, rocket scientists of insurance doing this stuff, when I was being, having to delegate things to people that I didn't have confidence that they could do it as well as me. And they were 50 and I was 27 years old. So I just started taking everything, within myself and just doing the work on my own. And as I did that over the course of the next 2.5 years, I started to realize, this is all smoke and mirrors. We're just painting this picture to the client that we have some secret formula and some special, special ingredient here. This is just a matter of returning emails on time. This is just a matter of,
this isn't some big, you're like, hey, if I actually wake up and I have energy and I hit my list and I actually deliver.
I'm going to tell you what, you know what the hardest part of the damn job is? Getting clients, getting clients, not servicing them. Once you got them, servicing these clients, it ain't too hard to do as long as you're a punctual person. So I was already being asked from a production standpoint to go get the clients. I knew I could get the clients. Now, you know, corporate America would like you to think as a salesperson, okay, you get them, but you need these experts over here to service them. No. You don't. Okay. A good salesman that's a good technician is actually going to be able to service them better, usually, than those types of support people, is what I experienced. So I just decided, you know what, forget this. I'm going to go see if I can get clients on my own. And I had a relatively low expectation, or not expectation. I had a goal for myself that was significant.
What was the goal? I have a question. Yeah. Did you write it down? Because I think a lot of people, when they're looking at tips of success and how to get stuff done, I have a whole top term and topic we'll have for another time about like embracing your own neurostyle. So I think that was something that you alluded to, and really having a true and unbiased evaluation of yourself and how to get it done. Can you give all of us like some tips of how you get it done, besides, you know, your personality that we can feel? Like, what were your tips of making it happen?
Well, I was very calculated. When you leave your job to go start your own company, you don't want to just do it all willy-nilly. Unless you have to, because you got fired and you don't have any other job prospects, but you know, which is fine too, by the way. But this was not the situation I was in. I was on the fast track as a rising star in a really good organization, in an industry that has a lot of money. The writing was on the wall. By the time I'm 40 years old, I'm going to be one of the executives, and maybe, who knows, you know, whatever. I was definitely on that.
Wait, can I just be a little edgy? The idea of the American dream, the way we're supposed to do this, right? Mm-hmm. I know I've seen you kind of in your IG videos talk about sort of kind of what the paradigms are. And a lot of times people aren't encouraged to think for themselves, and they sort of get like the golden hand. I would say the golden handcuff syndrome.
I'm going to tell you what, and it comes in different forms. So for me, what ended up happening was, you have all these vendors that you work with. And if you're a good salesperson, you have people calling you, hey, do you want to go golfing? Hey, do you want to go to this happy hour? Do you want to go to dinner? Do you want to go to lunch? Do you want to go to a Cubs game? And you start seeing people embracing that. And it almost becomes like, I don't want to offend anyone. I was going to make it an analogy to like being addicted to a drug or something like that. But I don't want to offend anyone. But it's like you start to do a little of it. You know, once every couple of weeks, I'm going to go to this happy hour. I'm going to go to this golf outing. Over time, you start to do that shit all the time. And what does that do for your clients? How are you becoming a better steward for the clients? How is that helping you sell by networking with vendors that are kissing your ass? And I started to realize that so damn quickly that it's like, okay, that's why people are sticking around here until their whole careers.
Can I just do a deep dive on this? This is really crucial. Mm-hmm. Because I think the linear language frustrates me, because there's so much of a backstory. Now you're like, oh, people might get upset. So what I want to say is, we all kind of have what I call healthy versus unhealthy adrenaline rushes. And to me, it's about the dose of what you need to do. So strategic networking. So if you already have an incredible relationship with someone, and then you can use your time, whether it's being at the gym, whether it's coming up with a new business idea, or a deeper dive into knowing one or two people better that you might have an offshoot business idea. Can you comment on that?
Yeah. And well, I definitely can. There is a time to be strategic about it, and I'll relate it to what I'm talking about right now. Okay. If I have a bunch of insurance, so if I'm the insurance broker or consultant that represents all these, you know, corporations as my clients, and I have all of these insurance companies over here that are really just trying to wine and dine me because they want me to put my clients with them as the vendor. This is not strategic. It's strategic for them. It is not strategic for me. My client has absolutely nothing to do with it whatsoever, except arguably, maybe you could say I'm going to get them a better deal because I went and got drunk or played golf with the guy from Blue Cross. I mean, I don't know, but like, it's kind of a stretch, right? So mm-hmm. it really just becomes those vendors, you know, kissing the rear ends of these insurance brokers or consultants that control the business to get them the clients. This is not strategic. Okay. That is what I call a waste of time. You're better off just giving the business to whoever you have, whatever the hell you want to give the business to, or whoever earned it, not because they golfed with you. Okay. And then using that time you're not spending doing crap like that on actually prospecting and making more phone calls for additional clients. Okay. And people that understand that is the difference between, you know, mediocre and great, in my opinion. And that was one of my big distinctions right there.
So do you feel like at that age, at 27, you were not only aware when you were making the leap of you needed 10% of your, I'm understanding this, that at that moment you're like, okay, here's my income. Here's what I need to do. I need to be strategic. Yep. I need to get the clients, and how am I going to do it? So then you had a more strategic networking versus non-strategic. I mean, we could be edgy and fun. I want to do like almost like a Saturday Night Live version with you later.
Well, I'll be specific with you if you want. It was 2005. I was making 140 grand working at Arthur J. Gallagher, which is a lot for that company. I'm sure people make more now or whatever, but it was very good. Okay. And I decided to walk away from that. And my thought was, hey, if I could go out and get 10 clients and they're each worth 30 grand a year. Okay. Now this is not easy to do, but this was my goal. Mm-hmm. Then I'm going to be making 300 grand a year if I could get 10 clients making 30, you know, where they're $30,000 a year in revenue from them. Okay, 300 grand. Now I'm going to keep my expenses low. I'm not going to hire anybody. And I should be able to have about 50 grand worth of expenses. So I'm making 250 grand. Now I have also the freedom of working for myself. How long is it going to take me to get to that level? It'll probably take a little bit, John. It's not going to happen overnight. Okay, fine. How long would it take me to get to 250 grand working at Arthur J. Gallagher at that time? And if I did the math there, I'm looking to be, I was 27 years old at the time. I was calculating somewhere between
33.
More actually, probably closer to 40 years old. People just at that time did not make that much there. I think they've changed their business model a little bit for how they compensate salespeople. But at the time, very few people were making over 200 grand in that kind of role. So I was like, oh, hey, by the time I'm 40, I probably will. All right, that's fine. Let me do this. Okay. Well, that was my goal. That was my expectation because I was kind of humble to myself. I knew I could do this. So I had, you know, the balls to go do it, but I was still kind of humble because I was so unknown. Okay, shit. I'm writing business left and right with Gallagher on my business card. What's going to happen when they're not?
So wait, I want to pause. This is a very crucial part. And maybe it's in the book that's coming out. Everyone, I think that humility factor, I want to just, if we were on stage with like you and I, with like tons of people in the audience, I would like stop everything and have flames go up and have the word humility three times. Because I think when we stay humble and we show up every day as though it's our first day of whatever we're doing, that's where it's like we haven't lost that kind of edge where you're there and you like, okay, today I've got to serve. Today I've got to get my clients. Or for me, how am I going to be the best doctor or do a great interview? I think humility can be like, just like gratitude. I always talk about gratitude being my secret sauce. I think humility on your rise up is also an incredible trait.
Awesome. I love that. That's so spot
humility.
On.
It's very important, John, and you have it. Yeah. So, okay, keep going.
Well, and you know what? I have it genuinely too. I'm going to tell you right now.
I actually just need to say this because I know it's really kind of odd when we're talking about ourselves. I just want to say I haven't spoken to you in years. I mean, just briefly, like back in 2020. But I have to tell you, when I just listen to your interviews and as I'm getting to know kind of what your brand's all about and what you're doing, that inspiration of humility is authentic. And I love that because people can make big assumptions about any of us on social media based on how we look, how much money we have. So I just think everyone, if you're out there trying to do good in the world, you know, whether you're a venture capitalist, an influencer, having that humility and like gratitude of where you came from and what you're really wanting to do, I feel like that makes us more interesting. And we kind of want to work or do business with that person.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes a person's definitely more likable if they're just humble in general. And I'm going to tell you what, it's kind of funny. Yes, I'm very humble. I'm talking about, it's not very humble to tell people how humble you are, I guess, but
that's what I'm laughing about. That's like, I don't want to do, like, let's just make note to love to do a video. You know, when you do your videos with the boom, well, I was just on with Dr. Denise. We talked about humility a little too long. Okay. Let's move to
But I'm going to tell you what though, just the other day, my editor got back to me in my book and he's making me add a bunch of stuff. And his point is that I'm not talking about myself and my accomplishments enough. And it's, his point is you got to flex a little bit here, a lot more than you're doing. Because you got to give yourself that credibility with the reader on why they should listen to you in the first place. So he has notes up and down. What I thought was the final draft of my book has now kind of pushed back some hours of work I'm going to be doing on it. But
is important. I like to talk about the Earth game versus for me, it's the universe game. Because the Earth game that we're in, if we even look at the media, you know, people want this, like, it's almost like everyone wants to be fed, like, sensationalism or this or that or this many awards or, oh, the sky is falling. So I think it's this is almost like it's a whole other topic because I want to keep going with your story. But let's flag that idea of when you're branding yourself, that fine line, I imagine like a seesaw, like how much do you tell about yourself? What's humility? What's too much? And I think day to day that could change based on your audience.
Right. Yep. I like that. Well, so to go back to what you were asking me then I walked away from a job making 140. I had a goal long-term to make 300 one day or 300 in revenue and, you know, 250 thing. And I was kind of looking at it as the freedom that comes along with it. It wasn't just the 250 grand. It was the freedom of owning your own company and, you know, everything else. And I really just blew through those numbers immensely. And, it turned into just a great thing for me where, gosh, at the end I was making a little bit over 10 times it was over $3 million at the end. So, and the only reason it ended and didn't keep going up was because private equity players entered the insurance space and kind of really made, like the Godfather, they made you an offer you couldn't refuse. And if it wasn't for private equity being in this space, I would have continued doing what I love doing. And, my business really took off because I found a way to compete against much larger competitors. And that was in a niche environment. I started focusing on a very specific type of client. And the referral system within those clients was huge. They're calling me left and right. And it also allowed me to operate with a very significant profit margin because I didn't have to put a lot of money towards a sales force or towards marketing because my referral system was so strong, organically because of the type of client I was working with.
I have the benefit of just watching your interview with Adam. So yep. I think it's really important. So I want to compliment your ability to give kind of difficult information in a way that's understandable, someone who's not been in this situation. So when I listened to your interview yesterday, my understanding is that you grew this business. You were running at an 80% profit margin. You started to have people come to you and present deals that just didn't make fiscal sense. I would like you to kind of piggyback and talk about that in a minute. But then finally, this new opportunity came where they really saw the value of your company and the profit over the years. They made you an offer that made absolute sense and you got stock.
That's pretty accurate. It's a little, the reasons are a little bit different though. So historically, insurance people that did what I did would buy smaller companies and they'd base the purchase of the company off a multiple of the gross revenue that organization has. Okay. So just to use easy numbers, if somebody was making, if they brought in $1 million of revenue, they might get bought by a bigger competitor for 1.5 to 2 times that revenue. So $1.5 million to $2 million is what you would buy a $1 million revenue company for. Okay. Well, the problem with that was for me, was that my profit margins from a percentage standpoint were way higher than the industry norm. I was operating at about an 80% profit margin, or what we'll call EBITDA, which means that for every $1 million I was making in revenue, 800 grand of it was revenue to John Sarasani. Okay, it was me.
So, ding, 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 ding. So you're like, see you guys. I'm not going to be taking that offer.
Well, exactly. So if you come in and offer somebody $2 million and they're making $8 million.
They're making like, $800,000, right? $800,000 a year, right?
Yeah. And in that example, but then multiply all these numbers by three, though, or really four, really. But it didn't make any sense. Now, these companies thought it was a good idea because the industry norm is about a 20% profit margin. So if I'm at $1 million and my profit was only 200 grand, and right, you're trying to buy me for 1.5 to 2 million, hey, yes, this is a great deal.
Yes, 1,000%.
So what
this
happened?
This is like a ding, 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 because I think a lot of people get intimidated by mathematics, and to me, this is really simple the way you're explaining this.
Well, and the only reason anything changed was not because of my success, Denise, because the model would have still been the model. We always would have had, it just would have been relatively different with just bigger numbers, but we would have always still had the same problem we just described. The change came when New York City's private equity players decided they want to be in the insurance space. And the reason private equity firms have done this is because they squeezed every last drop out of every other industry that they've already been in for the last 20 or 30 years. So now they're looking for new opportunities. Yeah. So they've
Can I tell you what's coming to mind before you say anything else?
Sure, sure.
Right deal, right time.
Denise, that is so damn accurate because I never would have. Okay.
This is like unfucking believable.
Yeah.
And by the way, I know you and I both appreciate profanity, and I don't know how many people, but I have what's called the fuck button, so I just need to hit it right now.
Why don't you go outside and play hide and go fuck off?
Okay. This is like, hold on, one more.
Fuckity fuck fuck.
Okay. So with that being said, we'll use that in live stuff too. With that being said, this is unbelievable. I'm going to say it again, right deal, right time.
So what happened was the private equity changed the game in terms of how the purchases were being made for insurance companies like mine. They were no longer based on gross revenue on a 2x multiple. They were instead based on earnings. So in the example I talked earlier, that 800 grand, and they were using multiples that are more in the higher single digits. So just for sake of circumstances, let's call it 9x. So let's just say I can't use full disclosure. I can't.
No. Like, we're good. We're good. We get it. Let's actually just for your protection of the John Sarasani brand, let's say someone's making 200,000 of earnings a year, and then a company comes in and they take the 200,000 and they times it by 9.
Correct.
So then we've got what? Like we've got, 2x9, 18, 1.8 million, right?
Exactly.
So it's a whole different business model. And then depending on who comes in to which venture capitalist comes in, they're going to look at the CEO, the John Sarasani's, the Aaron Rodgers, and they're going to say, wait a second, how long do I need the energy of this leader around? How much am I going to pay them fiscally, or how much stock options? So that's where you really start to look at the whole picture, because not everyone can replicate the energy that a John Sarasani or someone else can do. Because I know, and that's like a whole nother show. Not all energy is created equal, and not all leadership is.
Right. Yeah. And that's what they did for me. They mandated that I worked there for a certain amount of time after the sale. And that actually worked out awesome, because part of the deal was they made me take part of my deal in stock. And the reason that they do that is because they want me to have some kind of incentive to, show up to work each day and, want the company to do well. Well, I took a minority piece of this deal in stock, and I'll just say in the few years that I worked there afterward, insurance in the private equity space caught on legitimate fire and was going crazy. That stock went up 1,000%, over 1,000%. And I ended up making more money on the minority share of stock than I did on the entire deal. So by the time I, so that's seriously the right place at the right time. If this would have been 10 years earlier or 10 years later, it would never in a million years have unfolded like this for me. So I'm very fortunate.
Wow. Okay. I'm right here with the right deal, right time, but I want to just do a deep dive right here at the end about the power of intuition and your inner voice, because, and then we don't have to make the numbers. This is more the inner voice of when you were, and this can be applied not to just that one deal, because I know you have confidentiality, but maybe future deals that we'll talk about in other interviews. But when you are in that moment and you're not only reviewing the numbers, the quality of the contract, the business acumen of the people, I think that the power of intuition with logic is crucial when you're making these decisions, these life-changing decisions.
Yeah.
Did you have an intuition on any, maybe it's too specific. I just feel like if I didn't know someone and they were giving me a deal and I was negotiating, of course it's a no-brainer if they're looking at anyone's earnings and they're going to give you a single digit number like that, like we just discussed, but that ability to say yes to the stock, or because some people might say, well, I mean, they probably weren't going to take you if you didn't say yes to the stock because they thought you wouldn't work hard. So don't you think, though, that moment when you were deciding and negotiating, you have to really trust your gut a lot, too?
Yeah, you did. I mean, I spent in the six figures on legal fees. I had the best lawyers looking at these contracts. The fact they also had, I wasn't the first company that they bought. So, and I knew what their business model was. It was to keep buying up companies like mine. So they had a lot to lose if they did something below board or if it didn't work out. They had all the incentive in the world for me and my deal to be this huge success because they plan on duplicating over and over again. And the more money I make, the more money they make. So all the interests were aligned from that standpoint. I do want to comment, though, on this intuition piece that you just said, because I thought of something related but a little bit different, by the word you used of intuition. When I was all said and done over there, all right, I have all my money, everything's done, okay? I have to sit out for 2 years, all right? I have 2 years of not being able to work in insurance, okay?
Are you still working with them or...?
No. So the deal is they're going to give me all this money. Hey, you can't just turn around and try to steal all your clients back the day you leave or anything like that. Right. And it's a non-compete. And I know in California, they're hard to enforce, but just when it's tied into a business deal where they've given you a significant amount of money, I believe in California it might not be enforceable, but for the rest of the country, it kind of really is, because it's tied into millions of dollars. And, you know, anyway, from a legal standpoint. Now, here's the thing, though. All right. My 2 years are up. I know that I could turn around and go right back into insurance and do this again in 10 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. I've looked at my life and I've said, you know what? I've given so much of my time and effort to insurance. And yes, it's been very lucrative for me. And yes, I'm good at it. But when I'm on my deathbed, you know, wouldn't it be nice to have some more feathers in the cap of what my life experiences were? And they don't even have to be professional. But I just know myself. Yes. If I dabble in insurance, it's going to end up being more than dabbling. I'm going to end up doing this and it's going to dominate my time. So my intuition was, hey, let's do some stuff a little bit more fun. Let's invest in other entrepreneurs from a venture capital standpoint. Let's spend more time with my kids. Let's travel the world more than I've ever had the time to when I was really, you know, locked to my desk. And that's my life right now.
Yay, I love that. That's amazing. That was a short description of intuition. I would like to do a part three later because we've done part
You got two. It.
Yeah, no, I mean, this, because it's also, this is like a whole other, like, you know how I always like to come up with, well, first of all, your ability to translate very difficult concepts into ones that are understandable not only here on these shows, but also in everything you're doing is excellent. So I just want to thank you for that. And number two, I love the story. And number three, can you tell everyone a little bit about what's next and where they can find you, some of the things you're working on? And we'll have you back on.
Yeah, you got it. So my website is glencrestglobal.com. That's my venture capital firm. I am also writing a book called The 2000% Raise. 2000%raise.com is, I own it. Nothing's on there yet, but it will be soon. Really to keep in touch with me on a more regular basis, at John Sarasani on Instagram and TikTok.
Okay. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, John, for your time today.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi.